Welcome to NGA Notable Lectures, a podcast offering a deeper understanding of all things artistic. Bringing together some 115 photographs from across four decades of the artist's career, Sally Mann, A Thousand Crossings, offers both a sweeping overview of her achievement and a focused exploration of the continuing influence of the American South on her work. For a public symposium held on April 14, 2018, in conjunction with the exhibition, LaRon Brooks further explores Mann's treatment of history. Mann's landscape photography reimagines land as a facet of memory and narrative. Brooks examines how these themes are intertwined and relevant to this moment in our nation's history, revealing that the past contains every part of whom we have become. This program is made possible by the James D. and Catherine K. Steele Fund for Photography.
Starting on US 60, it's 782 miles and 12 hours by car from Lexington, Virginia to Tallahatchie, Mississippi. The river which bears the town's name meanders in a bloodline of water that flows from Tippah County and helps form the Yazoo River at about 100 miles south of where it began. It seems everything is connected in the South. This is to say that Mississippi, and indeed the entirety of the South, is filled with intermingling bloodlines and blood spilled. And the language of the Choctaws, the word Tallahatchie means rock of waters, for the iron, sandstone, in the river's belly. Among African Americans in the county, the name can also be associated with death for the river's occasional floods, and how in 1955, 4 years before Sally Mann's birth in Virginia, the body of Emmett Till was pulled from the river's brown bottom with fishing nets and laid near the thickets of its muddy delta in Lahore County, where the small town named Money sits. Till, the black Chicago teenager, was kidnapped and murdered in Money for supposedly whistling at Carolyn Bryant, a white woman who we now know lied about the incident. Her husband was among the attackers who were brought to trial and identified in court by Till's uncle, Moses Wright, as his nephew's abductors. Each offender was found not guilty of the crime. The courtroom of locals cheered when the verdict was read. The black press, who were in back of the segregated courtroom, shared the news over landlines and telegraphs and speedily left town. And Moses Wright, understandably, fled Money that night, never to return. Images of Till's mutilated body, which you will not see here, were published only in the black press at first and then nationally in the mainstream media. Emmett Till's story marks the beginning of the modern civil rights movement. And in 1998, Sally Mann visited Money to photograph what was left of the murder scene. Mann traveled through the Deep South that year, traveling through her native Virginia and stopping in Alabama, Louisiana, and here, Money, Mississippi, guided in her own words by, not by intellect, but by an inmost consciousness, waking, and cognizance. For me, she continued, the Deep South was haunted by the souls of millions of African Americans who built that part of the country with their hands and with the sweat and the blood of their backs. She had come from a progressive household in Lexington. Her brother had been arrested numerous times in protest rallies, and her parents were sensitive to issues of racial inequality. She'd not yet been politically active as a teenager, but in these photographs, her awareness begins to bloom. Mann's photographs and Money retrace Till's path to death in an episodic fashion, piece of land by piece of land. Each composition is a dramatic eyeful. In the image titled Deep South, untitled Emmett Till Riverbank, the artist photographs the site where Till's mutilated body was found. It had been in the river tied to a fan. In the image, the earth cracks open like a fault line, and the sky seems to holler a storm downward into the trench opened by that fault. And the river that had held the boy now reflects the trees above its dry shimmer. On the opposite bank, the trees that bore witness to the original act so many years ago stand. The top corners of the photograph are darkened and the water is transformed into a semi-circular lit moon, whispering ether downward into the split earth where the boy was brought back. In the photograph, man harnesses the imagistic powers of the water, the earth, and the sky, and the effort to reimagine the end of Till's path, and our empathy with it as metaphors for the moral death of the South, and to our own rising awareness of the history of race she had failed to witness as a child behind her own privileges. Each of her experimental landscapes, their heavy blacks, their loose and opaque brushwork of light, their uncertain forms, each exhibits a kind of reckoning with the event of a black boy murdered to uphold the dignity of a white woman. In some way, the images in their hardness and obscurity can be understood as the artist wrestling with her own socially inscribed power, which is and was the inherent inheritance of power in the segregated South and in post-segregated South, the post-segregated South, and in America. The landscapes in all their starkness can be understood as ways of looking at the ramifications of this power outside of oneself, outside of one's own body, as if it were a feral reflection of affect. And if this is true, that the memory of loss places us in the world, and that ritual can be attached to how that loss is remembered, what can we say of man naming her own son Emmett? I would argue that the gesture is the artist's recognition that history can turn as rivers turn, and bloodlines can be made new through empathy and metaphor, or at least the attempt at each. Some 55 years before Sally Mann was born in Virginia in 1951, the infamous Plessy versus Ferguson Supreme Court decision in 1896 and Virginia's state constitution of 1902 set the terms by which whites would come to know and not know, sense and yet not see, the lives of African-American Virginians. In Plessy, the Supreme Court upheld racial segregation under the doctrine of separate but equal. But as lived and applied, the latter meant more than the former. And in all of the former Confederate states, including Virginia, Mississippi, Georgia, and Alabama, where Mann traveled, state constitutions were rewritten and or amended to conform to Plessy. Virginia's own constitution of 1902 instituted poll taxes and literacy tests and mandated separate schools. Although Virginia public schools were racially segregated from the beginning in 1870, the Constitution of 1902 was the first to legally require segregation. It almost completely disenfranchised black voters with measures like poll taxes and literacy tests, meaning count the number of bubbles in a bar of soap with accuracy in order to vote, meaning name every senator, first name and last name, correctly to vote. In the years that followed, Virginia's legislature passed rigid laws to ensure that African Americans and whites stayed in separate realms. In 1904, the General Assembly gave streetcar companies the power to segregate passengers by race. Residential segregation came in 1912, and there were two acts passed in the 1920s that were the most specific segregation laws in the entire country. The Racial Integrity Act forbade interracial marriage, and the Public Assemblages Act mandated the segregation of whites and blacks in areas of public entertainment, like movie theaters and dance halls. What's more, laws commonly known as the Black Codes of the late 1800s, which had replaced the slave codes of the 1700s, made a crime of vagrancy and turned the act of simply being black and in public into misdemeanors and petty felonies and arrests, and were designed mainly to ensure the availability of black labor and the exploitation of black bodies. This is the beginning of what scholar and activist Michelle Alexander has called the New Jim Crow. And across the state and the nation, the 1920s and 30s also saw heightened anxieties over issues of race and ethnicity. This is evidenced by the rise of the Ku Klux Klan in the 1920s across the nation, and the recent events in Charlottesville reminds us this troubling history remains at our front door. Gigi, the man family's longtime domestic and confidant, had survived much of this, and her body is a landscape of evidence. She was the product of a segregated but self-reliant community with an emergent service-based middle class, which included physicians, lawyers, funeral parlor directors, teachers, and ministers with professional and cultural lives. Hotels, restaurants, theaters, retail shops, all existed in segregated urban areas but were largely invisible to white citizens. Reflecting on Gigi's life, Mann has commented, "How did a widowed black woman pay for the housing, the food, the travel, and the tuition to educate 6 children? By working 12 hours a day and by taking in linens to iron at night, linens stuffed into white sacks, crowding her front door when my father took her home. After all day on her feet in our house, what did he think when he saw those bags? What were any of us thinking? Why did we never ask the questions? That's the mystery of it, our blindness and our silence." Examples of Mann's recent photography exhibit the attempt at coming to terms with this history of silence, which had been her social and political legacy from birth as a white Virginian caught in the legacy of the segregation that enwrapped all of their lives. Her photographs in the Deep South are an extension of this attempt to come to terms with the troubling histories inside of Southern bones. In Mann's photographs, Gigi's body, it's its own landscape of evidences of which much of which she knows of the world and the white people around the Mann home, but she will never reveal what she knows of the world inside that home. There is too much danger. And here, the artist has learned to see Gigi's body as a landscape. Gigi's skin is a mask and a territory. Her skin is a terrain of which segregation has done its work. In the poem, "We Wear the Mask," from 1896, the famed African-American poet Paul Laurence Dunbar wrote, "We wear the mask that grins and lies. It hides our cheeks and shades our eyes. This debt we pay to human guile. With torn and bleeding hearts we smile, and mouth with myriad subtilities." Stephen is a metaphor for the black men of the South who have passed by man namelessly in silence and blindness. The making of the image, it seems, was an attempt to acknowledge the value of their undervalued lives in the cultural imagination of the South. There is no easy smile here. The terrain of his sullen face is the mask, and his mind is the sunken valley behind it. A smile would have an uneasy journey across the valley to his lips, but why would a smile be the expectation? And is he safe in the world without that smile? Picturing expanses of land and flesh, Sally Mann has made the effort to no longer be silent about the histories that are hers and the histories we share with her, be it from differing standpoints. On this point, the writer and activist James Baldwin once stated, quote, "Not everything that is faced can be changed, but nothing can be changed until it is faced." This exhibition is therefore an invitation for you to imagine your possibilities differently. Thank you.
This has been a National Gallery of Art podcast.